So I thought what I will do in my short time is to give you a new vignette on glioblastomas and how it might begin to change the thinking in which one might want to treat them. So as most of you know, that glioblastoma is one of the very nasty kind of tumors where the survival rate hasn't really changed very much over the last many, many years. In fact, here is the GBM. Basically, 11, 12 months is the average. That's the survival, even in the best opportunity, best care of it, despite the fact lots and lots of work has gone into it. So we were interested to really fundamentally find out what is the origin of glioblastoma. How does it start? Why is it so nasty in terms of its ability, particularly when the recurrence occurs? So three postdoctoral fellows in the lab. Dino is a postdoctoral fellow from Israel. Shushi and Tomo decided to do a following sets of experiments. What they began to ask is the following question. We wanted to make a mouse model in a different way than the models exist before. We argued that we knew the genes that are involved in causing GBMs. There are three kinds of genes that are involved. One, which cause cell proliferation. Second, which causes the DNA's instability, either through the P53 pathway or the RB pathway. So we knew that you needed to have one set of genes which cause cell proliferation, another called the genomic instability. And the way we did these experiments is to take advantage of the lentiviral vectors, where we introduced the gene of interest, which is floxed, and also has a marker in it. And we introduced that in a brain cell which contains Cre, and only the cell which contains Cre will the gene of interest be expressed, because that's when it is called floxed. So the idea was simple: to make a viral vector, introduce the genes of interest, which are floxed, introduced in a cell which makes the Cre, and only that cell where the gene is expressed is going to, the Cre is expressed, the gene is going to make the protein. So here is an example of introducing genes either in the hippocampus or in the left ventricular, subventricular zone, cortex, and so on. And because the genes are marked with GFP, we could actually calculate the number of cells in which the gene was introduced. For example, in the case of cortex, 60 cells, hippocampus, 57 cells, subventricular zone, 27 cells, and you can count then the number of cells where the gene is introduced. So now think about this model system. At the background is a normal brain of billions of cells, but only a couple of cells here where the gene has been introduced has the ability to initiate and begin to form the tumors. The tumors were formed depending on the nature of the gene we introduced, time it takes to make the tumors. The tumors have all the hallmarks of the human GBMs by and large. They have high density, they're hemorrhagic, perivascular. They are highly infiltrative in capacity, and in fact, these are the tumors that are made. And in this case, we had actually RAS, which is a surrogate for EGF receptor amplification, and P53 was the gene which will be used as a way of causing genomic instability, which is found in many of the GBMs. So we knew how to make these tumors. We can reproducibly make them depending upon the cell where we introduce, whether it's the glial cells or neuronal cells or oligodendrocytes. It didn't matter whether we used a RAS gene, which is actually amplifying the cell growth, or we could also use, which is about 20% of the gliomas, a NF1 gene, which is also involved in the RAS pathway, but it's a suppressor gene. So we make a vector where we have the NF1 gene and the P53, we essentially got always the same tumors. The pathology is a little bit different, the time is a little different, but the general way is to make the tumors. So that is to say, variety of different genes which have been identified in different GBMs have the ability to introduce, when introduced into appropriate cell types, to make tumors. The tumors could be then, we can do the MR on them with the gadolinium staining, which is not very different from that of the human GBMs. This is the human GBM, and here is, again, from the human GBM. So the mouse model is very similar in this case, both the nature of the cell type and physiology. Now, this is part of what we began to learn from the GBM team that I'm involved in it with Mitch Berger, Evan Schneider, and Webb Cavani. Those are the principal people. We are sort of the junior partners, basically provide them the model systems here. And what I was impressed was this particular slide, where here is the post-op recurrence. The tumor is gone after surgery. Presumably, these are very good surgeons. They did a very good job on it. But very shortly after that, the tumor came back, and in fact, much more vehemently and in areas where it is not operatable. So the question is, how come a GBM is so vicious in the sense that so quickly after post-operation and even during radiation, the tumors came back? And in fact, when we did the same thing with our mouse models, we simply took as few as 10 cells, put them back into the mouse brain, in this case the hippocampus, the tumors came exactly just the way we started out with them. So that argues that as few as, and in fact I bet a single cell will do it if you have a postdoc who will wait long enough to do the experiment, that every cell has acquired now the ability to make a complete glioblastoma. And that might explain why the surgeon who has removed 99.9997%, every cell left behind has the ability to become a tumor, become a full tumor, because they have become now somehow or the other, you may wish to call them cancer-initiating cell or a stem cell. So what's the definition of stem cell? We already heard from Dennis before, so the work they have been doing. A cancer stem cell is found within the tumor that possess the characteristics associated with a normal stem cell. That is, they will continue to replicate and they will differentiate to different lineages. Ability to self-renew and ability to give rise to all cell types found in a particular cancer sample. First of all, if we now take these tumors, 005 just happens to be the name of the tumor, grow them in vitro in the neuroculture, they continuously proliferate. So the first definition of these GBMs is that they have the ability to continuously replicate in vitro, just like in a normal neuronal stem cell would do. They can differentiate to all lineages. I show you a glial neuronal, I don't have here on the oligodendrocyte, but they also in vitro differentiate, so they have two of the capabilities. Furthermore, if we now go back to the GBMs, what we find that even though we started the tumor in a glial cell, the tumor itself has nestin positive, which is a marker for neuronal stem cell. They're positive for oligodendrocyte, they're positive for neurons, and they're positive for glial cells. So again, fulfilling the characteristics of a stem cell, that not only they replicate, they differentiate, they in fact contain all the lineages that are present in that particular tumor or in that particular capability of a stem cell to differentiate into different lineages. So we began in collaboration with Mark Eisen at UCSD to begin to ask the question, if we now know that we put a gene or genes in a glial cell or a neuronal cell, and that it went on to become a stem cell, can we actually monitor it? Since we know they will always make the tumor, since we have the GFP, can we actually see the transition of these differentiated, thermally differentiated cells, which have been insulted by the addition of the oncogene, to go on to differentiate or de-differentiate to become a stem cell? So the way we did was to inject it directly into the brain, as I said before. Here is about 200 cells, and we reconstruct every time the entire brain after every week or 2 weeks or 10 days, sacrifice the animal and ask the question, what do they contain? We put in them glial cells, what do they have now? So if we do just after 5 days, the cells are GFP positive, remember, that's what the gene we put in. They are negative for nestin because we put them in the glial cell. They're positive for glial cells, they're GFP positive, and here you can see the overlay of the green and the red. So in 5 days after injection, we see largely the expression in the glial cells. But already 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks after the injection is done, we can begin to see they're GFP positive, they're glial positive, and you can see green and red coming together. But by 8 weeks already, we see very few glial cells. In fact, by 8 weeks or so, majority of the cells now become nestin positive. So they have transitioned in response to these oncogenes to get a terminally differentiated cell into becoming a neuron positive cell, a more nestin positive or a neuronal marker or a progenitor marker positive. So one could argue, gee, how did we know that we introduced the gene in a nestin positive cell to start with? We just didn't know that. Well, it's possible because we don't always know what goes in vivo. So we took cells in vitro, cultured them, made them glial specific, so they're GFAP positive, they're negative for nestin, SOX2, or all the neuronal markers. They are now GFP positive when put the gene, put them back into the tumor, they make exactly the same tumors. So we did pre-convinced that, and the same is true for neurons, that it is not that we are hitting a double cell, we know what cell we are hitting, but they can go on to differentiate to become a stem cell. And now if you look at the markers, you can do a microarray analysis. I can show you the maps, but the important point is to just look for some standard markers. If we now look that the cell we started out was all astrocyte positive because those are glial cells. But once they become tumors, all the special genes which are positive for neuronal stem cells, for the progenitor cells are turned on, but the genes which are for astrocytes are now pretty much gone. In other words, we have taken a terminally differentiated cell and now de-differentiated to become a stem cell, whereby the terminally differentiated markers have substantially reduced or pretty much gone in this case. So what have we done? We really have done exactly what Yamanaka did. What did Yamanaka do? He put MYC, KLF4, OCT4, SOX2, remove P53, later on other people did that, and got a cell which was a terminally differentiated cell go on to become a pluripotent stem cell. In the brain, we have taken glial, neuronal, or other type of cells, introduced RAS and F1, P53. They have now gone on to become SOX2 positive, NANOC positive, MYC positive, and we know that because we have the markers. And now they have become essentially a differentiated cell, has become a stem cell, which now have the ability to go on to become all these differentiated cells. But more importantly, each one of them, when went back, will cause again a tumor because they de-differentiate to become a stem cell. So in fact, if you take any of these, put them back into the tumor after the tumor, they all make the tumor. So the only difference is, because they are in the brain, we think they are making neuronal stem cell, because if we do exactly the same experiment in vitro, take a glial cell, put these genes, we actually make an iPS from them, much like what you have, the terminally differentiated fibroblast or a keratinocyte. So we think that glioblastomas are originating from, we don't really care where they originate. We think they can originate from any place, from neurons, from neural stem cells. They can originate from nestin positive. They can originate from oligodendrocyte. But following the introduction of specific sets of genes, they de-differentiate in a manner that we know over here to go on to become a stem cell, which now has the ability to continuously replicate, and therefore any cell left behind has the ability to make tumors. So what we have begun to do is to now begin to ask how we can block this process, how we can block this process using small cells, small molecules, and so on. And that's the way we are beginning to think to deal with glioblastomas. So, coming back to the team itself, the team is, the leader of the team is Mitch Berger, which is the disease team project for the stem cell-mediated oncocytal gene therapy of glioblastoma. That's the project for which the funding has been given, and that is the leader is Mitch Berger and David James, Webb Cavani, as I said, from Ludwig Institute, and Evan Schneider, who is here. He is the leader from the Burnham. So we are, as I said, junior partners, because what we really contribute to this project is to ask the question, can they take stem cells, in their case, either neural stem cells or mesenchymal cells, can they use our mouse model to introduce them to these stem cells? Can they show that these stem cells can A, migrate to these tumors, B, do they have the ability to stay there, and C, we actually put oncocytal genes, do they have the ability to kill the tumors? And I just show you one such example. Here is our tumor, the green tumor, remember the 005. When they put human neuronal stem cells in this case, you can see once intracranially injected into the tumors, cells are there, they survive, but many of them actually migrate out too. We don't quite understand that. So our part in this is to actually provide model systems where they can eventually use these neuronal stem cells which they have introduced on a suicidal gene, which can then presumably kill these tumor cells. So with that, I'd like to thank you for your attention and happy to answer questions at the end when we have the panel. Thank you very much.